I'm Greta Cunningham.
Thank you, Greta. It's 6 minutes now past 11. And good morning. Welcome to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Ankton. Glad you could join us. Well, President George W. Bush has delivered what's been billed as a major policy address. The president, as you heard, spoke this morning just a few minutes ago at St. Paul's River Center. The speech has drawn national, even international attention because of its import. And this hour of Midday, we're going to focus on what the president had to say. We're going to get some reactions from some folks who are focused primarily on the energy aspects of what the president had to say. We're also going to be talking politics this hour. Our political analyst, Chris Gilbert, has joined us from Gustavus Adolphus College this morning to talk about the president's visit. And as always, we invite you to join our conversation. We actually have two conversations underway this morning. First of all, here on the radio, we'd love to get your comments on the air. Questions for Chris at 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, you can reach us toll-free, and that number is 1-800-242-2828, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Also, online, we have a continuing conversation about the president's energy policies. If you would like to comment on the president's energy speech, get up on our soapbox. We are giving you the opportunity via the soapbox to have your say on energy policy. Also, we're conducting an informal survey on the president's proposals. So if you'd like to participate in that online event, MinnesotaPublicRadio.org. Once again, those of you with questions and comments here on the radio, the number 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. We'll be going back to the St. Paul River Center and Dan Olson in just a moment. But Chris Gilbert, thanks for joining us this morning.
Good to be with you this morning, Gary.
We should note that you are the chair of the Political Science Department at Gustavus. Chris, very briefly, why do you think the president picked St. Paul for this speech, of all places?
Well, Gary, St. Paul does happen to have a good pilot project, the so-called the district energy plan there. And, you know, I think any time that you can roll out a major proposal in front of something that represents the kind of approach you would like to take, sort of more micro generation as opposed to just building large power plants, that's a good thing. Certainly also, I think the notion of perhaps helping to heal some divisions that have resulted from the Bush administration's intervention, shall we say, in the 2002 Republican Senate race, I think that sort of called on him to make a personal appearance. And I think that certainly meeting with leaders today is going to go a long way to help assuage any feelings that were hurt by the actions recently that certainly favored Mayor Coleman for that position. So it kills two birds with one stone. Minnesota, I think, is considered a place where environmental concerns are taken seriously. And so if Bush, the president, wants people to take him at his word that his administration does not see environmental concerns as incompatible with meeting the nation's energy needs into the future, Minnesota is a pretty good backdrop for that. So it fits politically, but I think it also fits with the perception that the president wants to leave with the public about how we can go about addressing the real needs that we do have in a way that does not raise huge public concerns about the environmental costs that are associated with that.
Democrats and many environmentalists were very critical of the president's policies even before he officially outlined them today. Given what he said in his speech last hour, is that criticism likely to continue, or do you think the president was fairly effective in addressing the critics?
Well, I think both can probably be true. The criticism is going to go forward. Anytime you raise the question of nuclear power in the United States, the public reaction tends to be negative, and that is one that a lot of folks on the opposite side of the aisle are going to be harping on, although I think that we need to talk about whether nuclear power has a larger share of the nation's energy future. There are significant issues involved, and in some respects, nuclear power has gotten a bum rap, but in other respects, those in favor of nuclear power have glossed over some of the significant problems that are associated. That's not likely to go away. More important, I think, is the call from both sides of the aisle, really, from Republicans and Democrats, about meeting the short-term concerns. That's energy production in California, but also certainly it's gas prices, and that's something that members of Congress are nervous about as they think about their own reelection chances down the road. And certainly Republicans are nervous because it won't take too many defeats of Republican members for the Democrats to regain control, at which point the political calculus of Washington changes significantly in the following 2 years. So I think the criticism is likely to still be there. Having said that, the president clearly, I think, found language today to present the policies in a much more effective way than what had come out piecemeal, primarily through the vice president. The vice president was on Sunday television a couple weeks ago and just so thoroughly talked down the notion of conservation as being any benefit at all that I think it appalled some people in the White House. It just stands to reason that the less electricity you may use in the first place, that you are saving something. And the vice president really just talked that down so far. I suspect that the focus group work the Bush White House has been using here suggested that people just don't buy that. So it was not surprising at all that conservation came number one in this speech, and then he moved on to other issues. So I think they are thinking through and starting to think about better ways of presenting these ideas. There are controversial aspects, no doubt, all over this plan, but finding a way to sort of present to people what you think are the best aspects is important. And I think he did a pretty good job. He needs to learn how to pronounce the word nuclear, but if that's a part of our energy future, nuclear is not going to cut it time after time. But I think you can see the initial public reactions reflected in the changed nature of what this speech emphasized today.
Well, let's see how what the president had to say meshes with what's happening here in the state of Minnesota. Back to the River Center in St. Paul, where Dan Olson is standing by with the State Commerce Commissioner. Dan?
Right you are, Gary. Thanks. It's just winding up here. The president, by the way, I should mention just before we get to Commerce Commissioner Jim Bernstein, spent a few minutes shaking hands, pressing the flesh, saying hello to some of the folks. And then the martial music continues in the background. Here's Minnesota Commerce Commissioner Jim Bernstein with a little reaction. And Commissioner, it was interesting just listening to Chris Gilbert here on the air, noting, as you noted, that the President of the United States lifted conservation up. What's your reaction?
Well, I think that was, it's amazing what's happened in the last 60 days or so, because conservation, renewables were not even on the horizon. No one was talking about those. There's been a lot of public reaction, and I think the administration recognizes Americans want conservation. Americans want investment in renewables and alternative technologies. So I was pleased to see that the president has elevated that conversation. I also think he's going down the right direction.
We didn't hear much about renewables. There was a little bit in the speech about renewables until the very end. And, of course, as we know here in Minnesota, we love our windmills.
We love windmills. That was something I was disappointed in, that this is the one resource that we have in Minnesota. We don't have any natural gas. We have no coal. We've got virtually no hydro. Wind is our major energy resource. And I wish the president would have focused a little bit more on that. On the other hand, the devil's in the details. We haven't seen those yet.
Does the windmill idea need a lot of federal support in the way of either removal of restrictions or tax credits?
It needs the federal tax credits. And I understood that was what he was referring to towards the end. And I think he made it fairly clear, at least to me, that he is going to support the federal renewable energy or wind tax credit. So that's a real plus for us here.
He did not mention specifically, we saw in news accounts, the reference to perhaps asking Congress to grant the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission power of eminent domain. So presumably Commissioner Bernstein or the governor would get a call from the feds and say, guys, we want to come in and put up some power lines in Minnesota.
Well, I don't think that's the answer. We have a hard enough time siting transmission when the state, county, and municipal authorities work at it. The idea the federal government comes in and says, well, we're going to take care of this problem, we're going to solve this problem, I don't think it's going to get a very good reaction, and I don't think that's the way to go.
But, I mean, we have seen in ample illustration that when Minnesotans are asked to give up farm fields, pasture lands, right of way across their land, that there's a fair amount of opposition. Does the equation change, in your opinion, when now it's the federal government coming to the landowners and saying, folks, we need this? He referred to President Eisenhower's interstate system, kind of calling on the flag here, waving the flag to get this job done.
If anything, I think the fact that the federal government says we're going to do it makes the situation even worse. I have detected, as I travel around our state, no interest in having the federal government solve Minnesota's energy problems. I just don't see that. The other issue here is that we have got at least a working proposal. and that is where we have 115 or 230 kilovolt lines, allowing them to upgrade along existing corridors. Even my friend George Grant, who's been real active on this issue, agrees that that's probably the best solution. We have to get energy from where it's being produced to where it's being consumed. There's no question. Minnesotans recognize that. But the idea, instead of just building new transmission to take power from Colorado and ship it to Illinois or New York or Florida, I don't think that's going to get a very positive response in our state.
So, Commissioner Bernstein, in Minnesota's future, if the governor and you and the other cabinet members were to create a sketch, you've already created a sketch, I guess, is there more coal-fired generation in our future? Is there more nuclear in our future?
I don't think there's going to be more nuclear in our future. There is a proposal by Senator Rodd and Representative Jennings to look at that. I don't sense there's any public will in this state today to build more nuclear. There is a chance, and I think a reasonably good chance, we're going to build a couple more traditional coal-fired plants. I think that's probably going to happen. But the real focus needs to be on conservation and renewables, especially wind.
The state has, how would you characterize it, limited or considerable power to encourage citizens to be more conservation-minded?
We have adequate power today. The problem is what happens in the end of the decade. There is going to be a shortage, but we can solve a lot of that through conservation. One of the things the president talked about, and I was very encouraged to hear him talk about, more R&D for more conservation. There's a lot of great ideas, not just in our state, but the other states as well. Letting the private sector take those ideas, letting government take those ideas. People want to conserve. That's one of the questions that we get all the time, is how can we can do a better job of conserving?
Do you think he's fair, the president is fair, in saying that it's the restrictions that are hampering the risk takers, as he calls them, people in business, from making the new investment? Or, in fact, are the investors kind of saying to business, no, 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 go with the tried and true, stay with technology we know, don't get out there in front trying to do something new?
Well, there are some good examples, and here in District Energy is one of the best examples of taking some chances of actually implementing some very good ideas. The idea of letting more of those happen is very good. What I think is going on is people are going to wait for tax credits now. The president talked a lot about tax credits, and I think there's going to be folks saying, well, why don't we wait until we can get the tax credit? For example, some of the high-efficiency, low-energy-consuming air conditioners, washer-dryer combinations. We could do a lot better all over the country if we use these in the Energy Star program, but the president didn't raise that, but I'm hoping. I really hope in the details there's a real commitment to Energy Star, there's a real commitment to using better and more efficient energy technologies.
Minnesota Commerce Commissioner Jim Bernstein, thanks so much for stopping by.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Gary, we're winding it up here at the River Center, and the place is basically empty. A couple of radio and television interviews taking place. That's about it, so I will send it back to you at the studio.
All right. Thank you, Dan. We should note that President Bush now on his way to Iowa, to try to rally some support for the energy policy that he outlined last hour in a speech at the River Center in downtown St. Paul. Chris Gilbert is on the line from St. Peter. We have lots of callers on the line with their comments and questions about the president's speech. Quick question for you, Chris, before we get to our first caller. How, from a perception standpoint, how does President Bush overcome the big oil label that Democrats have been hanging on him?
That's a real difficult one, Gary, and it hangs over the presentation of this. Whether you like what the president had to say or whether you didn't, that's an important perceptual problem. I think statements like talking about how environmental concerns and energy production need not be in contradiction to one another, I think that's the president's signal to people that he is committed to the values that most Americans share. And I think the Commerce Commissioner was right on the money, that people are willing to invest in more energy efficient systems. Our automobile purchasing probably does not match up with that right now, as well as in some other areas, but those are going to continue to be important concerns. The ties of the president, of his father, of his vice president, I mean, it's all over the place, and in many respects I think you can understand this is a culture in which George W. Bush has grown up. It's been part of his background, part of his own life's work. And so sort of reaching the conclusion that most energy analysts have reached, that I think is inescapable, that 20 or 30 years down the road, fossil fuels are simply not the way we're going to be able to meet America's energy needs because they're going to be running out, that's a difficult conclusion. It's a culture change. And so beginning to make that transition, beginning to support renewables is extremely important. Those are the kind of signals that need to be sent. And I just point out quickly to conclude, the Bush budget for this year does not really include an awful lot of money. In fact, he's cut funding for research and development into supporting more renewable fuels. So in a sense, the budget has not yet caught up with this plan. That's understandable because this wasn't even on, I think, most people's radar screens, Republican or Democrat, prior to the problems we heard about in California. So we're really working this out on the fly. It is true the Clinton administration didn't have an energy plan, but it's not as if Republicans have one either during that eight-year period. And the kinks need to be worked out a little bit, but that's going to continue to be a perceptual problem. Even if we weren't talking about drilling up in Anwar, you know, that's going to continue to ride over this debate as we move forward.
John, your question for Chris Gilbert, please.
Yeah, good morning. Great conversation. Say, I just want to mention that we should keep in mind the history of President Bush. What you know, he's great with moderate rhetoric and image. You know, like we're going to promise to go with the Kyoto. Went back when he was campaigning, and then he backed off. Now he's doing this great job. You know, moderate image. Yeah, we're going to do renewables. He cut the 20%. The whole deal with the research and development there. He's here to help get rid of Wellstone by supporting Norm Coleman, Twin Stadium, the whole deal there.
Your question or comment here?
My question is that don't get fooled. Don't buy into it. This guy, he's for the top 1%. He manipulates facts, energy crisis. That means let's give the money to the top 1%. Economy slowing, give money to the top 1%. You know, let's not get fooled by this, guys. The guys for nuclear stuff, it's messed up. It's not forward thinking at all.
All right. Chris, that raises the issue. How does the president get people to focus on his policy proposals as opposed to the more political aspects of this?
Sure. Well, step one, obviously, Gary, is to continue to articulate in detail what those proposals are. And there are a whole lot of things in this proposal that if they come from a Democratic president wouldn't necessarily be criticized as much as they are. That is the sense that perhaps Bush doesn't really mean what he says when he talks about the importance of protecting the environment while moving forward. And certainly one can make a substantive case that some of what he says doesn't reflect that. But if we take him at his word, and at the moment I see no reason not to, there are some significant steps forward that start to shift the places from which America gets its energy, and that has to happen. I think nobody disagrees that that has to happen sooner or later, better sooner than later. But will this president, like the last president, not wish to take on Detroit automakers in terms of increasing standards for miles per gallon ratings? Clinton thought about that and backed off several times. That helps to put us in the situation we're in today with gas prices. Will he take on, significant steps to help more clean burning of fossil fuels? That's not clear. He talked a lot about that today. At the same time, he's asking Congress to suspend many of the regulations that are already in place to meet the short-term concerns, especially in California. Those two things don't seem to match up either. But I think continuing to talk about it and continuing to be detailed as to how this all fits together, I thought that was the best part of the speech today. It is a lot of different things that need to fit together to make this happen. That's the way to go. Nuclear power in particular, the perceptual problem of getting people to think that, yes, nuclear power can be a good thing for our future is huge. We have 21 years, Three Mile Island through Chernobyl. 21 years of sort of this constant generalized sense presented in the media, I think quite effectively, that nuclear power is not the way to go, that it's too dangerous, that we don't know what to do with the waste. There are counter arguments to that, and I'm not suggesting that nuclear power is the right way to go, but it needs to be part of the discussion and not just dismissed out of hand. And that's going to be really, really difficult to do for this president or for Al Gore if he had been the president. If you're going to start to dismiss all of these ideas just out of hand, then all of a sudden you don't have a comprehensive energy policy, and we can't just quite pick and choose what we like. That's probably not going to get us to where we need to go. As the president said correctly, electricity use as the foundation of the American economy is on the rise. That's just the reality of the more technological age that we live in, and we need to take steps to meet that, and it's going to to take a lot of different steps to get there. So the plan is going to be hacked to pieces, and that's always the problem with comprehensive plans. And I'm not suggesting that the comprehensiveness of this plan is all that we need, but it's going to be hard to hold that together as you move forward. That's the best that can be said. It's going to be hard to hold it together.
Mm-hmm. Benjamin, your comment, please.
Well, as far as taking the president at his word, we could go for hours on that because campaign speak to where he is now has already been proven. But my question is, expanding eminent domain, of course, scared the heck out of me. But the main thing is, all the things that he talked about for solutions seem to be, on the surface, good ideas. But why do any of those things require scaling back of current environmental controls that are in place now? Why does anything going forward in the future require us to step backward on our environmental policy?
That's an extremely good question that I think the president's address and the plan as we currently understand it does not really articulate a convincing answer to yet. I think the president and his advisors are hoping and expecting that starting these kinds of speeches with the conservation angle, I think the correct statements that I think most Americans would take to heart, that environment and electrical production need not be in conflict with one another, that's not yet matched by the proposals that have been put forward. As I just mentioned, it's important that he did not tell us that he has proposed in the short term that environmental laws or environmental regulations be sort of, you know, put suspended so that we can meet those needs, and I also wonder if it's not a case of sort of what can I actually do in the short term to suggest to people that this is the right way to go. I would expect in the future that the rhetoric will shift towards talking about government regulations as opposed to talking about environmental regulations, because I would suspect that the average member of the American public would say government regulations are bad, but environmental regulations probably have a good idea behind them. And so I sort of put the onus on the government and not on environmental stuff, and maybe you can start to get people to see that that's a good idea. But that's a pretty big hurdle to clear, because I think the substantive evidence as to whether or not you need to roll back environmental regulations in order to meet short-term needs is far from clear as to what the right answer is.
Chris Gilbert, chair of the Political Science Department at Gustavus Adolphus, is with us to talk about President Bush's energy policy outlined last hour in a speech, what it was billed as a major policy address delivered at River Center in downtown St. Paul. Again, if you'd like to join our conversation, 651-227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. If you're near a computer, make sure you get up on the soapbox. Join our conversation online. Lots of folks have weighed in with their comments on the energy proposal outlined by the president. We're also conducting an informal survey online, so take advantage of that opportunity, minnesotapublicradio.org. President Bush is the motorcade is now out at the airport as the president gets ready to head off to Iowa. Bill Catlin joins us. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Gary. I'm watching President Bush just cross the threshold of Air Force One. He walked up the steps, had a brief session after the limousine pulled up and shook a few hands, took a few photos, and he stepped inside. He's running a little bit early. He was expected to take off at noon. I would venture to say that he's likely to beat that by about 10 or 15 minutes. EPA Administrator Christy Todd Whitman just headed up the stairs, and now if I can tell from the back, it looks like Energy Secretary Spencer Abraham is mounting the steps. Few more people to go, but it looks like they are heading for a fairly quick departure.
Dignitaries and or protesters bidding the president bon voyage?
There are no protesters that I have seen here. There were no dignitaries that I recognized on his return from his speech. When he arrived, there were several dignitaries, Governor Jesse Ventura, his son Tyrell, St. Paul Mayor Norm Coleman, of course, who rode with the president in the limousine to St. Paul, House Speaker Steve Swigum, and former Republican U.S. Senator Rudy Boschwitz were all greeting him when he arrived.
Okay, Bill, so everything going well at the airport and the president about ready to take off?
Here so, yes.
Bound for Iowa.
Bound for Iowa.
Thanks, Bill.
Take care.
Minnesota Public Radio reporter Bill Catlin joining us from Twin City International Airport. We'll continue our conversation with Chris Gilbert. Get to more of your calls here in just a couple of minutes.
Tony Soprano is not a nice fellow, but cable television has given his dysfunctional family room for an award-winning drama, and that has the major networks worried.
Network executives agonize over how to compete against their cable rival. Rivals liberated from the moral uplift windbags who terrorize commercial television.
I'm David Brancaccio, the politics of primetime, later on Marketplace from PRI.
That's tonight at 6:30 here on Minnesota Public Radio. Quick reminder, over the noon hour today, it's off to the Minnesota meeting. Should be a very interesting Minnesota meeting today. Governor Jesse Ventura will be speaking over the noon hour. Of course, last night, the governor met with the legislative leaders, Swigum and Moe. They tried to work out an overall agreement to break the stalemate that's developed at the Minnesota legislature. They failed. And now there is talk that a special legislative session is almost guaranteed. The governor, of course, has said repeatedly he wanted no part of a special session, and we're expecting to hear some interesting comments from the governor today about what's happening at the state capitol. Live coverage of the Minnesota meeting at noon today. Right now, news headlines. Here's Greta Cunningham. Greta?
Good morning, Gary. As we've been discussing on Midday Today, President Bush was in St. Paul this morning to outline his administration's plan for increasing the nation's energy supply. Bush's proposal included expanded oil and gas drilling on public land and rejuvenating nuclear power. The 163-page report was prepared by a White House Energy Task Force headed by Vice President Dick Cheney. The blueprint cites a fundamental imbalance between supply and demand and depicts a gloomy energy picture. Former President Jimmy Carter says the energy situation facing the country is really not all that bad and could be much worse. In an editorial in the Washington Post, Carter says the nation's current energy problems are not as severe as the energy crisis he faced as president in the 1970s. He notes that the world energy supplies are adequate and stable, and he adds that automobiles aren't waiting in line at service stations. Carter lost re-election in 1980, partly because of fallout from the energy crisis. Carter is in the Twin Cities today for the dedication of the law school complex at the University of Minnesota. The complex will be named after Minnesota native and former Vice President Walter Mondale. The mayor of York, Pennsylvania, is free on bond after being arraigned on a murder charge. Charlie Robertson was a white police officer in York during the 1969 race riots that brought the shooting death of a black woman. He's accused of playing a role in that slaying. In regional news, two women are suing the St. Paul Fire Department and city officials on claims they conspired to make them fail firefighting training. The women are alleging sex discrimination, age discrimination, and conspiracy. A fire department spokesman says all the recruits are held to the same standards and that the women failed to meet them. The forecast for Minnesota calls for a chance of showers and thunderstorms in the northeast, partly to mostly sunny skies elsewhere around the state, highs ranging from 68 to 78 degrees. At this hour, Duluth reports some clouds and 63 degrees. It's sunny in Rochester and 74. Sunshine in St. Cloud and 66. And in the Twin Cities, partly sunny skies with a temperature of 71. Gary, that's a check on the latest news.
Thanks, Greta. 26 minutes before 12 o'clock. This is Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. This hour, we're talking about the energy proposal that was outlined by President Bush last hour. Chris Gilbert, our political analyst, Gus Davis, has joined us. And on the line as well right now is Minnesota 6th District Democratic Congressman Bill Luther, who is a member of the House Energy and Commerce Committee. Congressman Luther, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you.
I understand you folks get first shot at the governor or at the president's plan.
Well, I think so, and probably some of those shots are already being taken, Gary. So anyway, we do expect that it'll be coming up in the committee in the near future.
In general, do you think the president's on the right path here, more production and more conservation, or has he tilted the scales too much?
Well, I think that is the question, and it seems to me that if you're looking at a comprehensive approach, that there needs to be a lot more focus on the energy efficiency conservation side. And the reason I say that, Gary, is and Chris, you're on board also?
I am. Hi, Congressman.
Right. The reason I say that is in Washington, there are so many lobbyists and interest groups pushing for the traditional energy forms. I mean, coal's got its lobby, oil, nuclear. They're intense lobbies here in Washington. And so to get any decent consideration of the other components that are critical to developing a comprehensive plan, the only way you can do that is by having real strong leadership on those other components. Because the traditional energy sources tend to take care of themselves because of the incredible political and financial clout they have in Washington. And so the disappointing part of the whole program is that there isn't nearly enough focus on the conservation and the energy efficiency and the alternative forms of energy. Too much appears to be simply a plan that was put together apparently by this group headed by Vice President Cheney, and I think it's predictable what that group would come up with. And I think it was great the president was in Minnesota because we obviously have a different point of view on these issues, and hopefully over time we can sensitize him to this more comprehensive approach that I think Minnesotans support.
Congressman, do you think that this debate will play out on the merits of the various proposals, policy proposals, or is there a real strong temptation, real, I suppose, on both sides, to focus on the politics here?
Well, like most things, I think it'll probably be at both levels, Gary. Obviously, when we get into the committee work, we'll be dealing with the specific proposals. But I do expect, I'm here in Washington today, so I didn't get the benefit of what the immediate reaction there in Minnesota is, but I assume, I'll be back later tonight, but I assume that there was considerable controversy there with various groups, because
yes,
I haven't heard all the reports, but I think that overall there will be a major discussion about this in the country, and a lot of that will involve politics. I think when we get into the committee here, we're going to have to focus on the specific approaches and make sure that we have a comprehensive approach and that these other considerations are given their due.
Okay. Thanks, Congressman. I appreciate you joining us.
Oh, anytime, and I hope you'll keep in touch. This will be a major issue that we will be dealing with, and I think, if I can just add, I think Minnesotans are particularly concerned about those gas prices going up every day, and it seems to me that we need relief.
Well, before we let you go, then what do you want to do about that? That would provide some immediate relief at the gas pump.
Well, I think you recall that this did start. We had the beginning of a similar situation a couple of years ago. At that time, we had an administration that was willing to forcefully deal with the oil industry. In other words, we had an FTC investigation, and we had a climate then that simply would not, a political climate here, governmental climate that would not tolerate gouging, and I think by the oil industry. And I think that we need to have leaders in Washington that take a very tough view of any kind of gouging, any kind of monopolistic practices going on in the industry. I'll give you an example. The governor of California right now is asking for relief. He's basically pleading with Washington to help them get through this problem they have in California. And basically what they want is they want a time out until market forces can take effect. All they're asking for is some cap for the immediate future here on these wholesale prices. And yet their request is falling on deaf ears, and Californians are just paying through the teeth in their gas and energy prices. So I think that if we have a very a government that's watching over the industry and not allowing them to get out of control, willing to be firm, I think that goes a long way in sending the right message, and I think that's the kind of message Americans want sent to this industry.
Thank you, Congressman. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you.
Minnesota 6th District Democratic Congressman Bill Luther joining us from Washington. Congressman Luther sits on turns out to be, Chris Gilbert, a key committee in Congress, the Energy and Commerce Committee, first line, really, of where this energy debate will be heard in the Congress.
It sure is, Gary, and it's interesting how some of the aspects of this really cross some of the traditional partisan lines that we've talked about. In many respects, conservation could be seen as a very Republican idea, because a lot of it comes down to personal behavior and individuals changing what kind of car they buy, how often they keep their lights on, things like that. But other aspects of this, especially the federalization of the eminent domain power to expand the electric power grid, that's not exactly what you'd expect to hear traditionally from a Republican president. As our Commerce Commissioner mentioned, I'm not sure that's going to get very far, but the interests on that committee are diverse. A lot of people representing important energy-producing states, and that's clearly a natural constituency that sees both economic benefits and wise policy choices in what the president's talking about. But other individuals like Congressman Luther from states that don't have as much of the traditional power resources but could really benefit from the further usage of renewables, wind in particular in Minnesota, we are scratching the surface of what could be done. And there's a lot of exciting ideas out there about how to, on smaller scales, to use wind, to use solar, even in our climate, to be able to start to meet energy needs. And a lot of that needs to be talked about in the context of the rather strange market situation we have, where sometimes there's complete control and sometimes it's completely unregulated as far as electricity production and transmission across local and state lines. It is just so many facets to this. What's most interesting to me is how in the last 2 weeks the administration has ratcheted up the rhetoric, just like they did when the tax cut proposal sort of faltered a few weeks ago, and started talking more about crisis. And I think it's an interesting question. Are we in an energy crisis, and does that rhetoric from the administration's point of view really helped to sell their plan, just as Bush and his advisors kind of talked down the economy in many ways in recent weeks to try to sell the idea of a tax cut? That's an interesting strategy, to sort of talk down the situation in an effort to sort of foster the notion that something really has to happen and then to have a substantive plan to back it up. I'm not sure that everybody's convinced we're in a crisis. If my lights were going on and off in California, maybe I'd feel a little bit differently, but certainly the gas price, as Congressman Luther suggested, is really where it hits almost everybody. And on that note, I think perhaps the crisis language is going to help the Bush administration to fast-track some of these ideas, at least to fast-track their introduction into Congress, if not their passage.
Wheels up. The president has departed Minnesota on his way to Iowa. Dick, your comment on the president's proposal today, please.
Well, first, I thought it was a pretty complete and pretty cogent statement of what we've got here. We've got an economy of about $10 trillion. It burns roughly one kilowatt hour of electricity, or $10 trillion per in volume, in terms of national products. What I'm saying, we have a one-to-one ratio there. We need power in this country. And he pretty well laid it on the line that you can't let the situation develop that, for example, developed in California, where, very frankly, they brought their reserves down to about 7% of generating capacity. It doesn't take much of a disruption to put you in a very serious situation. A couple of things that I think are of interest here in terms of, I was just listening to Mr. Luther's discussion of gas price. I'm on the road all the time. I put in about 700 miles a week. Very bluntly, the way you control this is one of two things. First, I've paid as high as $1.89. I just bought it this morning at $1.70. I'm aware of what's happening. But I also had an awful nice period about a year and a half ago at 99 cents. We're dealing with a commodity here, and its price is going to fluctuate. So I think that one of my answers to it is, very frankly, handling it by virtue of controlling my mileage. And I don't see the need to take the kind of action that, very frankly, I saw of capping, for example, prices in the Carter administration that resulted in gas lines.
Okay. And point two?
Pardon?
Your other point?
Well, I think the other thing is this whole discussion of the idea of the power line issue in the grid system. I saw a recent discussion here in Mendota Heights where they were rejecting that line from the Allen King plant, and I've been driving up to Wisconsin where we have the Wasatch Superior issue going on of trying to stop that line. We need to put this grid system in place and have it perform. And I think that, again, he's right on track with the idea that we may need some type of authority. Incidentally, NSP does have eminent domain within Minnesota on this issue, so at least as far as I've been able to understand. So I think he's right on. I'm pretty well what he's saying. And without wealth, you can't protect the environment. It's a practical matter. Wealth can.
Thanks, Dan.
Okay.
Appreciate the comments. Conventional wisdom, Chris Gilbert said, our caller there, Dick, alluded back to the Carter administration. Conventional wisdom holds that President Carter was undone by the energy crisis of the 70s. Is that actually true? And is the president vulnerable to getting in the same morass?
Well, in the end, Gary, President Carter was probably more undone by Iran hostage situation and the economy. But I think the energy crisis fed into that in many respects, and that was a serious crisis. Some of us do remember waiting in line for gasoline, and the kinds of market controls that were instituted in the Carter administration are really not the way that I think anyone is going to advocate we go right now in the Congress. It's certainly not price controls on gasoline. I don't even think we're going to really talk seriously about suspending the gas tax. That's really kind of a short-term solution that hurts other areas. But the perception that Carter's general message was we needed to do without, I think that's the conventional wisdom that's been handed down and rejected, I think, by most Washington folks as something that's not going to fly. I wonder if that's true. I think a lot of people, like Dick, our last caller, know that there are things they can do personally. Some people can't help how much they have to drive. Other people can. Choices about what kind of car you buy, choices about how you replace your furnace or your air conditioning system or your washer and dryer, all of these have important energy consequences, and all of these will contribute to a solution. A kilowatt not burned by a home is a kilowatt that is available in the existing grid to be used in other ways or to be used for purposes which simply can't be put off. And I think that's important. It doesn't take a genius to figure out just how little conservation has to take place for all of the energy potentially produced in the AMWA reserve not to be necessary, or certainly not to be as necessary in the short term, given existing technologies that certainly do at least bear some important questions about environmental consequences. The power line question, certainly within states, that local utilities tend to have that power, but as our Commerce Commissioner pointed out, it's going to be a lot more feasible politically to start to replace existing lines, towers that are already there and that are probably going to stay, with better transmission lines than it's going to be to say that the federal government is going to come in and do that. I think of the Western United States, which votes Republican in large part because they think Republicans are more likely to leave them alone. And I really wonder, even given the energy situation there, whether they think it's going to be a good idea for the federal government to mandate where a heck of a lot of new towers go. I just really wonder if that's going to fly and whether that really doesn't hit a core Republican constituency in a way that they're just not going to support. Nobody disagrees that the electrical power grid distribution system in the U.S. is flawed. It was set up in a piecemeal fashion, and it doesn't facilitate the efficient transference of places where there's more power to places that need it. And that's certainly something that has to be explored. But new pipelines, new towers for lines, I wonder if that's just not going to go very far because both sides of the aisle can find very different objections to it, one more environmental and the other more in terms of what this does about federal power over the states.
Paul, your comment, please.
Hi. You know, listening to the conversation, it's almost like there's a little bit of a split in what the president is talking about. It seems like Chris, you're actually taken seriously, you think that the president means some of what he's saying about trying to get more into new technologies. And from what I've read, the future holds more and more decentralized energy. That's kind of where things are headed in the next 20 or 30 years. And yet, when he's talking about nuclear power and especially the power line issue, I mean, the reality, I mean, if those things happen as much as he says he wants, what you're putting in place is a real hardcore infrastructure for a centralized energy system. And so it seems like, is there actually kind of indecision in there? And I guess I have sort of a question about the president himself, is that from listening to Congressman Luther say that perhaps over time we can sensitize him to some of these things and some things that you've said too. It's just, I mean, is there a sense in Washington that the president is sort of a work in progress as in terms of what he really believes and that he actually is sort of teachable on some of these things?
I think that sense is there, although I think Democrats have already developed the idea that Bush talks moderate and governs conservatively, or that the vice president in particular driving the policy decisions, of course, is going to govern conservatively, while Bush, as the lead person, puts
I think the more humane face on it. But maybe that's a roundabout way of saying that I think I agree that this energy policy is somewhat schizophrenic, primarily because of political concerns, that maybe these things don't quite match up. The Bush budget, as it now stands, does not match the rhetoric about support for renewables. The National Science Foundation budget was capped much lower than what was requested, and that funds a heck of a lot of research, mainly in universities, but not entirely, that will support better technologies, fuel cell technology research. There's a whole lot of things we could be doing that we could have been doing at a greater level for 20 or 25 years if we'd been a little more foresighted about that. But think about the political interests involved, and I'm not suggesting that big oil runs the country. I think that's just a gross overstatement. Nevertheless, that is the significant economic force in the U.S., and the reality is the significant economic forces have a large voice when it comes to public policymaking. And the president, in a sense, is constrained by the fact that some of those strong economic forces are important supports for his party, not just for him, but for the people who, you know, side with him in the Congress. And so you're walking a fine line here in terms of what's going to be manageable by Congress, that members of Congress know will not hurt them too much, and what's palatable to the public. And I think, like most modern presidents, the conclusion that Bush has already reached, which is that I think it's as bald as saying that we can't quite handle the truth. And that's probably wrong, but I think that's what Clinton thought, and that's what Bush thought, and it creates a whole lot of what amounts to intellectual dishonesty when you try to talk about important policy choices in the United States. I think it's probably not true that the public can't quite handle the truth, which is that we need to really start rethinking the way we do these things. But if that's what people conclude, it's always going to paint them into a corner of trying to sell things that even on the surface are not quite compatible with one another. And I'm sorry to see this administration get off on that same foot, because I think it hurt the Clinton administration in a whole variety of ways. Leaving aside the president's personal behavior in the last administration, that was a real difficulty. And I think it's going to be a difficulty again here.
Chris Gilbert is with us, chair of the Political Science Department at Gus Davis Adolphus College. We're talking about President Bush's energy proposal, which was outlined in a speech last hour at the River Center in downtown St. Paul. Joining us now from Washington, Minnesota Senator Paul Wellstone. Morning, Senator.
Good morning. Hey, if Chris is still there, you know, that's what I'm worried about, too, are all those contributions I get from the oil companies. I don't know what I'm going to do about this, Gary.
You have fairly critical of the president's program even before he announced it. Today he talked a lot about conservation, about finding a balance, production, more production, but conservation as well.
Well, here's the problem. First of all, talking about oil drilling in Anwar, pristine wilderness area. That my first filibuster in the Senate was against that. I'll filibuster it again. People in Minnesota don't support this. Then he talks about, you know, we call it greenwashing, what most of this policy is about, because then he zeroes in on conservation and renewable energy policy. But guess what? Where the funding comes from? The oil drilling in Anwar. So that's the choice he gives us. Now, look, almost all of this is fossil fuel energy policy. That's the focus. And there are a couple of problems with it. First of all, I mean, there's environmental problems. I mean, you know, we now are told that we should eat fish maybe once a week out of our lakes, and small children shouldn't eat the fish, and mothers expecting children shouldn't. That's air toxics. That's mercury. That's PCB. That's coal. We're not interested in more of that. We love our lakes and rivers and streams. So I'll just tell you, the president in his budget cut well over 30%, probably closer to 50%, the efficient energy use renewable conservation part. He can talk a little bit about it, but the overall focus of this is on fossil fuel polluting policy. And as the Catholic bishop said a long time ago, we're all but strangers and guests on this land, and we don't want any more environmental degradation. The other point is Minnesota, we're a cold weather state at the other end of the pipeline. We're not Texas. And when we import barrels of oil or MCS of natural gas, we export billions of dollars. Our state's energy bill is probably about $10 billion. Our future, a big part of our future, renewable biomass to electricity, wind, clean fuels, ethanol, biodiesel, saved energy, clean technology, small business. But that's not the path they're going down, because big oil companies are absolutely opposed to it. And then finally, I have to say two final things. One, the president wants to be there for Minnesotans.
he can do the same thing President Kennedy did with the steel companies. He can jawbone these big oil refineries, and he can tell them to bring down the gas prices right now. FTC did a report, said they didn't do the investment. They limited supply. Clear to me they're price gouging. Chevron, Exxon, 50% profits this past year. The president can use the bully pulpit and stand up for Minnesotans if he was willing to take on the oil companies. And then I don't think you've discussed this. I just got on, and thank you. But this really has got me fired up. I just found out that the administration, the president, is cutting the LIHEAP, Low-Income Energy Assistance Program, from $2.5 billion to $1.7 billion, $800 million cut. This is the lifeline program for the most vulnerable families in Minnesota, about 80,000 families, many senior citizens, many working poor with children. I have fought to save this program over the years. Whatever happened to compassionate conservative? What in the world are they doing cutting a lifeline program for the most vulnerable citizens in Minnesota as the energy prices continue to go up? I'm ready to take this policy on.
Okay, Senator, thanks for joining us. We're out of time. We're running out of time. Thanks for joining us. Minnesota Senator Paul Wellstone. Chris Gilbert, doesn't sound like Senator Wellstone will be voting wholeheartedly for the Bush plan.
It doesn't, Gary, and it points out some of what we've mentioned, that the Bush budget so far doesn't match some of what we've heard, and the budget numbers kind of boxed in any possible increases in the future in domestic spending. That's the nature of what's been proposed, and this new plan is going to have to fit into a framework that really holds down the potential for significant investment increases in energy. That just wasn't on the board when that plan, including the tax cut, but also including the spending caps, went into place. And it's going to be real interesting to see how the president can maneuver past that.
Couple of quick questions, sort of related, I guess. Well, one of them is, anyway, there was a lot of talk that part of the reason the president came to St. Paul was to prop up the likely Senate bid of Senator Mayor Norm Coleman against Paul Wellstone. True?
Probably. I think just mending the fences, as I mentioned at the start of the hour, is important if there are lingering resentment, and understandable though it would be, over Washington kind of dictating who the right Senate candidate should be. They weren't here in 1998, and I'm not sure the lesson is all negative for Norm Coleman heading into 2002, but I think it was real important to sort of be here personally and be able to present that message to local Republican leaders.
Mm-hmm. And then, just a couple of minutes, we're going off to the Minnesota meeting. Going to hear from Governor Jesse Ventura on an entirely different subject. He scheduled to speak about tripartisan government. I'm guessing, though, he's going to spend some time talking about the failure to reach an agreement with legislative leaders on an overall budget plan. Does that failure, in your mind, Chris, indicate that there really are big changes needed in the way the legislature operates?
I really don't think so, Gary. I think the governor will present that point of view and look at everyone's behavior throughout the session except his own as a way of sort of motivating those changes. But no, I think this is the reality of divided government. And if we had a governor, a DFL, or a Republican, I think we'd find ourselves in a similar boat than we are right now. And I'm not sure, once again, it suggests anything other than the legislative process moves as slowly and cautiously as the framers intended it to move. It will certainly stimulate talk about shortening sessions, changing the budget session, but I think the length of time is not the problem here. If anything, the artificial deadline of finishing now encourages this kind of behavior. Not every state legislature in a professionalized age decides to cut itself off from the ability to solve its problems before it goes out of session, and that's of course not the kind of solution we'll hear from the governor or from other sides of the aisle in the Capitol. But no, I don't think it presages any fundamental problem with how we do business. It says more about how the people involved are doing business than about the system itself.
Should be a lively speech, nonetheless. Chris,
as always.
Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good to be with you, Gary.
Chris Gilbert, who is the chair of the Political Science Department at Gustavus Adolphus College, joining us to talk about the energy proposal outlined by President Bush last hour in a major policy address delivered at the River Center in downtown St. Paul. Now, this conference, thanks to all of you who called in or tried to call in with your comments here this hour. Our conversation continues online. Take advantage of it. Get on the soapbox.